Austin Obispo County Sanitation District. This is Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. Maybe we have a roll call.
Director Hill.
Here.
Director White.
Here.
Chairman Schultz.
Here. Would you all please stand with us for the flag salute?
Please place your hands over your hearts and follow me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, we're going to move to agenda review. Do any members of the board want to change the order of the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I would request a moment of silence in honor of George Murray, who was recently being returned to this area after not being identified in the World War II Battle of Tarawa. And he has finally been identified and being returned to his kin in this area.
Okay, very good. We'll take a moment of silence, please. Thank you for that, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no other comments on the agenda.
Okay.
I have nothing.
Nothing. So we will move forward with the agenda as presented tonight. All right. Why don't we move into public comments? This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the board on any items that are not on this agenda. And I will give you 3 minutes. So please come forward and state your name for the record.
Ron Holt. At the previous meeting of this board, during public comment, some of us tried to issue a joint statement of concerns about the way the board has been functioning. Three of us spoke to cram our messages into the allotted 3 minutes per person. I realized during and after the comments that we tried to fit too much in and communicated poorly as a result. For those of you who found our message monotonous as we read it rapidly off, I apologize. I do not apologize for the substance of that message, however, as it was and still is legitimate. So I'm going to give a more abbreviated selective version now. This is the California Attorney General's interpretation of the Brown Act. It's roughly 50 pages in length with another 30 plus pages containing the act itself. After reading it carefully twice, I have to conclude that several of the board's actions this year are in violation of that act. Copies are available on the table by the entry, and for those who'd like to read it for themselves, I also have given Mr. Sweet copies for the board. In the first two paragraphs, it states that the legislature passed the act with the goal of increasing public participation, that exceptions to openness and public participation should be construed narrowly, and that there is a presumption of in favor of public access. Several of your recent decisions have done just the opposite of that. Here are two such examples. Both the announcements of topics for closed sessions and the reports of activities taken in them have not been up to Brown Act standards consistently. More specifically, more specificity is required, and even personnel decisions must be announced in summary form. No special meetings are allowed to discuss or act upon executive session. This is exactly what you did in regard to Mr. Huebner's exit. There are other apparent violations of the act, both in the law itself and in the spirit of the law, that have occurred, but I don't have time to get in them. Perhaps others will. My question is, why has this occurred? Haven't you been trained in the law on this subject, or have you forgotten what you've learned? Or has legal counsel done the typical lawyerly thing and given a twisted interpretation of the act to suit the desires of previous administrator or of certain board members? I think all of you need to review the Brown Act by yourself and consider the possibility that legal counsel has not been acting in the interests of the district as a whole, that maybe the Attorney General's advice on the subject would be better to follow. Make counsel justify his interpretations to you while you have the law sitting in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holt. Is there anyone else?
I'm Debbie Peterson. I'm a citizen and an informed council member. At the last meeting, and I'm speaking as a private citizen, at the last meeting, two of us were prohibited from completing our public comment, which the chair characterized as reading the Brown Act. By cutting us off, you denied our right to address the acts and omissions of our sewer district. When you and your advocates disparage those who exercise First Amendment and freedom of information rights, you strike at the heart of good governance. I have two issues of concern. Given your aversion to hearing the Brown Act, I will leave out code references. The first issue is your failure to adhere to the minimum standards set out in law. You, the former administrator, council, and the city council of Arroyo Grande have conspired to discourage the expression of one of your members, trampling one of our most treasured precepts as Americans, that the majority view rules and the minority view is protected. The Brown Act says any one director may place a matter on a future agenda. At the last meeting, as he's done in many meetings, your chair announced that there was no second, so the agenda items requested by the minority member would not be considered. You refused to discuss, number one, the budget of actual attorney costs as at the end of July for 2016 and 2017. Number two, the number of subjects of and costs of all investigations. Number three, the agreement with the former administrator and the vote taken. And number four, returning Mr. Clemens and Ms. Simpson to their positions after the numbers of investigations apparently have shown nothing. Your actions to penalize and discourage the expression of one of your members subjects you to action by the district attorney or any interested person to determine the lawfulness of these actions. The second issue is secret meetings. For you to meet with the intent to deprive ratepayers of information to which you know or have reason to know we are entitled is illegal. A secret meeting or meetings were confirmed in the press release issued by our departing administrator. His July 28th press release announcing an agreement between the board and himself was the first notice the public received. This came out the day after you held a closed session at a special meeting. The closed session subject was not revealed, and your counsel announced no reportable action taken. The Brown Act allows you, by agreement, to disclose confidential information. It's not a violation to express an opinion concerning the propriety or legality of closed session actions, including disclosure of the nature and extent of the action. Nor is it illegal to disclose non-confidential closed session information. Whistleblowers are not prohibited. Any one of you may tell us the full financial implications of the decisions you made regarding the former administrator's future salary and benefits now that his employment has ceased.
Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I've actually been in communication with your board quite a bit this last week. In light of Mr. Huebner's separation, you have new staff, and they have been prompt in fulfilling the Public Record Act request that some hung over into Mr. Huebner's tenure. And what was revealed were some pretty serious things. And I did write you letters. I believe Mr. Huebner overpaid himself some $3,500 related to moving expenses. There are some other payroll anomalies. I'm hopeful, and this is where I'm confused, in that you do not have a closed session item to open an investigation on Mr. Huebner's payroll, but there are some other payroll anomalies that need to see the light of day. And so as was said in an earlier investigation, when things from the public come forward that we have to investigate, I believe you have to investigate. And in doing so, one way out of your Brown Act violation is to cure and correct it. When you cure and correct it and you open up any sort of separation or termination with Mr. Huebner, then you will have the benefit of the public and the full knowledge of what we know, because we do our homework. Mr. Huebner did not take ethics training required by law. He did not take harassment training required by law. He took funds from this district, more than the $3,500, and I believe that to be true. You can then
I've been watching this board. I don't think that's going to happen, Mr. Huebner. And he smiled and said, I guess he won't get anything on the agenda then. So, I would also like to discuss the matter of where the next meeting would be was discussed. It wasn't discussed by the board. I'd like to know who made the decision as to where this meeting would be held tonight. It wasn't the board. It wasn't discussed at the last meeting. It usually is. I've been to a lot of meetings. We discuss where we're going to go when we change the venue. The meeting was closed down rather unceremoniously by Mayor Scholes before there was time to discuss issues that still needed to be discussed.
Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson. A couple of meetings ago in Grover, Ms. Lucy commented that the board needs to start being leaders, and I agree with that. I think it's time for you to step forward and be leaders. The last time the board met here, there were signs in the audience asking you guys to get out of litigation and move on to the district's business. I'm asking you to get out of the business of these witch hunts that we've been doing, calling them investigations. Obviously, the one that was done on Mr. Hill was no more than a witch hunt, snipe hunt, whatever you want to call it. Nothing was really determined that he did wrong. $30,000 was spent, and a lot of time, and a lot of people were upset over it. We still have some investigations going on, and John and Amy are part of that investigation. They need to be back into the district. We have people that are doing their jobs, 3 and 4 people doing Amy's jobs, a couple people doing John's jobs, and no one can do it the way they did it. If you look back at the history of this district when John was not only the acting administrator, but when he was running the plant ran, look at the water quality. You'll find the water quality was better. He ran the plant in the black. And the people that worked there were much happier. Amy's job was done explicitly. If she would have been in here last meeting, we'd have known where the meeting was going to be because she'd have put it on the agenda. They need to come back into the into the work field. We need to get rid of our investigations. They are nothing more than witch hunts. And the other thing I'd like to comment is on the last meeting when there were some people in the audience that were doing some inappropriate things to other members, a cow sound was, a moo was made, and we know who did it, but Patty said she would, she said let them know that I did it. I know it wasn't Patty because it wasn't a cow Patty. It was obviously a moo. And so let's try to move forward on that too. I guess that's all I have.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. My name is April Dury. In looking over the packet, one of the things that stood out to me was in the meeting minutes from August 2nd. It states the residences of people that are speaking before you, yet those people never utter the words of where they live. So I don't know if that's a direct way to marginalize, maybe profile them in some way, or make their statements less than in the eyes of other people. So I would request that maybe the minutes reflect what's actually said or determined, et cetera, instead of what's inferred by the people making them. Then also on the August 2nd minutes, Mr. Karp stated that he would review the financials based on conversation that had happened and report back to the board at the next meeting. Well, this is the next regular meeting, and while it's not an item agenda itself, I'm hoping that is part of his report, and if not, that you would remind him of his promise. And then lastly, in looking over the prior administrator's employment contract, in it, I mean, there's multiple things to discuss, and I know it's a foregone conclusion because he's gone, and I didn't go to the last meeting because you're going to do what you're going to do despite what we would like you to do. And although the man did not perform many things within his contract, two things come to mind. There was one way that he was to be gone, either by termination and severance or by resignation. And there were instructions under those two ways of doing it. But what happened wasn't either one of those things, because there's no 30-day written response or request for, I'm sorry, quitting employment. So I asked some people, and I was given the term hybrid. So my question is, why do we enter into legal contracts to not abide by them? Why do we then modify them in some kind of secret meeting that the public knows nothing about and you don't report out on? Why do we trust you then? If you're going to make a legally binding contract, please adhere to it or modify it. I mean, it is a resolution in the district's records that you did not follow. So please explain to me or someone or somehow let it be known why this isn't necessary to follow legal contracts. Thank you.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close public comment, bring it back to the board. Okay, let's move on to consent agenda. There are three things on consent agenda: approval of the warrants, approval of minutes for the special meeting of July 26th, and approval of minutes for the meeting of August 2nd, 2017. Karen, do you have something?
No, not really. Okay. But I, of course, wasn't at the other meetings.
Okay.
And I believe you were late at one. You were both at them.
I was present for most of the meetings. So
you have a majority for moving those forward.
Do any members of the board want to remove any items from consent?
I would request that the items be considered individually, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Let's do item 5A, approval of warrants. Jim, do you have anything on that?
Yes, I note again that the attorney's fees this period again exceed $20,000. I've long requested that we meet and discuss and put on the agenda a discussion for consideration of the enormous attorney fees that this district has encountered in the last year. And as a result, I've not been able to support these warrant payments, and I will not be able to support it again this evening.
Okay. Karen, anything?
No.
Okay. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to comment on this item?
Ron Holt again. $24,000 and change. That is the July legal billing for district council alone. At this rate, we will exceed last year's legal expenses by 20%, and that does not allow for any outside legal expenses. Current council's advice, combined with the ineptness of the recently departed administrator, has resulted in exorbitantly high legal bills, as Debbie Peterson demonstrated at the last meeting. We have slightly more than twice the revenue of Seaside in Monterey County. We have twice the staff. We have 20 times the legal bills over the past 2 years, and that does not include those associated with fighting the state over the huge fine for previous violations. That amounts to over $17 per hookup served for the past year alone. The investigations into largely baseless accusations against Jim Hill were a part of that. FOIA requests for Ms. Tacker and others were a much smaller part, and even there, most of them should not have required legal opinions had your past administrator not been set on fighting them tooth and nail. I am guessing that the biggest part had to do with the employee relations caused by an incompetent administrator. Council is welcome to correct me on this if this is not true, since we don't get the detailed reports of what their invoices cover. Competent and conscientious counsel would have advised Mr. Huebner to do things right and not helped him to cover up his incompetence. They should also have alerted the board of activities by Mr. Huebner that were likely to create legal problems. Why are we just blindly accepting these billings? When the district parted ways with its previous counsel, Mr. Seitz, I spoke out about the need to get new counsel who would be responsive to increased openness about board matters. That apparently didn't happen. In the future, perhaps opening up searches for administrators and counsel to the public would be advisable so that the public would be able to aid in evaluating them. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Good evening. April Dury. I wanted to talk about the payroll that's on this current warrant. Historically, I've looked at the last four warrants before this, and it runs roughly $32,000 a warrant. And this one is for $85,000. So taking into account the $37,500 that we're throwing at the previous administrator to go away, I don't understand where the additional $15,000 comes from. And I would like to know, and unfortunately, the way that the paperwork works, I can't look at any of the stuff to ascertain it. Whereas other districts do let you look at the detail, where we could find things like in Los Osos, the administrator there was stealing money, and you could see it in her paychecks. But when we ask for these records of your district, we don't get those records. And the same with the OCSD, when that person in charge was taking money that he felt was warranted him but wasn't. So the person who turns in payroll, where is the oversight if the previous administrator is the one turning in his overtime, his sick, his vacation, his whatever it may be? Where's the oversight on that? We, the public, don't get to make it. You, the board, I don't know if you're looking for it or know how to look for it. And the only person in the middle is the very person that we're questioning. So where is the oversight? That's my question. And could you tell me where this additional $15,000 in payroll is coming from? Thank you.
Okay.
Julie Tacker, and I, too, am concerned about the $24,000 of general legal counsel. You do have special counsel working on other items. I think we've already exceeded the budget for that. $24,000 is half the year's budget for your general counsel. So where are we going with this, ladies and gentlemen? I had some questions about the training Mr. Huebner took from the Water Board. Really, the reimbursement for training at the Water Board might be a legitimate expense. What I don't know are the previous trainings and reimbursements he characterized as trainings when they weren't. They were conferences. They were something else. This goes back to my request for an investigation into Mr. Huebner's payroll. We know now, but he hid it until very recently, that he did not take the harassment training and the ethics training. Those are the trainings you should be reimbursing him for. And they've never shown up on a warrant. The man never took them. I have some heartburn over Ms. Russo's accounting because Amy was doing that job. On occasion, she needed assistance, and Jocelyn Hodson was hired for that, very briefly and very inexpensively. So that needs to stop. With regard to the payroll, I believe the $15,000 that April's asking about is probably vacation, but we don't have that breakdown. We don't know. Mr. Huebner at one point said that he had jury duty. Did he take compensation from your district to go to jury duty? Did he follow the proper procedures? We don't have that. And with regard to your separation, if you do not approve this payroll package tonight, then you do not pay him the money that's agreed to in that separation agreement. As I said earlier, that separation agreement needs to be revisited, and he needs to be terminated for cause.
Anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson, I ditto Ron Holt's comments and also the comments that were made by the last speaker, Julie Tacker. I think that you may want to hold off on signing some warrants tonight for the past district administrator. Make sure that everything's on the up and up before you sign those. The other comment I want to make is for $24,000, we had two lawyers in the last closed session, which, in my opinion, was probably the separation agreement or was concerned. The district administrator, and they still didn't seem to follow the Brown Act. I mean, it took two of them, and they still didn't follow the Brown Act. Pretty amazing.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this and bring it back to the board. I think, Jim, we've heard your comments. Do you have anything else you want to add on this item?
No.
Okay. Karen?
Nope.
Okay. So I guess I would be interested. I did see the large legal bills, and look, we're all concerned about large legal bills, but as I've said previously, when folks, whether they are the public or whether they are employees, file a complaint or make an allegation, we must investigate. It's not something we like to do, and it's not money we like spending. But I think maybe in this particular case, Mr. Trujillo, maybe you and Ms. Stockton can maybe provide us some additional detail, obviously with what is allowed by law. I don't know if that's something, sounds like that's a concern that I've heard from Director Hill. I don't see any other items on this warrant that any of the board members have expressed concerns with. Jim, was there anything else you had a concern with?
I am also concerned with the apparently very large payroll payment.
Okay. Karen, anything?
Nope.
Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to add, sir, or any clarifications?
Thank you.
Oh. And well, in regards to the question about the 14.
In regards to the 15,000, it's really, I believe, 14,000 and some odd dollars. Ms. Tucker is correct. That was vacation that was reimbursed to him. And the rest was the payout amount. So that's what amounted for the increased costs.
Okay. Mr. Trio.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Stockton and mine's legal bills are really attributable to significant HR resource matters that we've been involved in. And I'm unable to go into detail on them other than the bill is itemized and every month and approved by your staff.
Okay. All right. Someone want to make a motion on this item?
Yeah, I'll make a motion. We approve the warrants.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to second them for a discussion. Anything else, Jim?
I've long requested that this board take an agenda item to discuss the alarmingly high legal bills, not per se to our district legal counsel, but for other attorneys' fees and so forth. This particular bill, I've not seen itemization on, but it does cause my concern because I've not reviewed the itemized billing.
Okay. So there is a motion. There's a second on the floor. Let's do a roll call.
Director Hill?
Respectfully but emphatically, no.
Director White?
Yes.
Chairman Schulz?
Yes. I would also say let's give staff some direction. Jim, I think you had talked about having a future agenda item regarding consideration of legal fees, and I would support that. So are you okay with giving that direction?
I've long requested that, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Very good.
I would also support that.
Okay. So staff, can you have that direction? All right, then let's move to the approval of minutes for the special meeting of July 26th. So we've moved that. Jim, do you have any corrections or clarifications?
With respect to the special meeting minutes, I'm disappointed in the lack of information that's reported in the report out. I think some
the
closed session report out, which the meeting, of course, was held only to have a closed session. And members of the public have indicated that they believe that a vote was taken in the meeting and so forth. And I think that the Brown Act requires that we provide as much information as we reasonably can to our constituents. And I'm not comfortable that that was done in this instance.
Okay. And Karen, you were not?
I was not present.
Okay. Let me open this up to the public. Is there anyone that would like to address this item?
Julie Tacker again, and I too was not in attendance at this meeting, and so I went to the minutes expecting them to explain what happened at that meeting. What must have happened at the meeting, but is not explained in the report out because there was no reportable action, is this: the separation agreement that has John Scholl's name and the date in which is the same as this meeting. So somehow the board came to consensus, or not. We need to know. We have the right to know what the vote was to let Mr. Huebner go with any sort of separation agreement. As April pointed out earlier, there is a way to terminate and there's a way to resign. This separation is a hybrid. Mr. Huebner was allowed to leave on good terms. He was allowed to leave with cash. He's allowed to leave in that good standing. He's allowed access to the medical benefits of the district paid into the future should he apply for them. I want to know how you got here, and I think the public deserves to know how you got here. What I'd like you to do is cure and correct the Brown Act violation in which I believe this meeting took place, because you went in there, you came to a financial settlement without the benefit of the full information that the public could have provided to help you terminate with cause. Rescind the separation agreement. Terminate the man for cause and keep the money in this district. I'd rather pay legal counsel to get this money back than let Mr. Huebner have it.
Is there anyone else?
Honor Armisen, I'd like to say I agree totally with Julie. Just lost my train of thought again. I think it is time that, as I said before, that you guys need to become leaders. You need to take hold of this this sanitation district and move forward. You also need to be transparent. John, you always talk about being transparent. Let's be transparent. Let's bring this forward and let people know what happened with this agreement.
Anyone else?
Patricia Price, Arroyo Grande. I sent a letter to the board and to legal counsel a few weeks ago asking for an investigation. I don't like investigations, but I thought this one was warranted. I wanted to investigate Mr. Huebner, and these are the things I wanted them to look at: his administrative skills, ability to produce staff reports, financial literacy, ability to work cooperative with regulatory agencies, authority for budget exceedances, project management, conflicts of interest, coercion for partisan political purpose and using authority for political and inappropriate purposes, knowledge of and adherence to noticing requirements, and more in that vein. And then with human relations, provision of a fair and equitable system of personnel management, appropriate application of discipline, consistency in personnel practices, willingness to institute best practices that were suggested by Mr. Knudsen, emotional stability, which didn't seem too apparent to me, why there were so many investigations, harassment, on and on and on. And I would encourage you to hold the money and bring this out into the public and terminate him with cause.
Anyone else? It's seeing no one come forward, let me close it and bring it back to the board. Legal counsel, the question continues to come up regarding the report out in closed session. So I wanted to get your opinion. And I think this board has always said we wanted to provide as much information as we could legally. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. The report out of closed session was in compliance with the Brown Act. The Brown Act requires that if the settlement is finalized in closed session, meaning that the last person to sign it is the board, then the Brown Act requires a reporting out of the terms of the settlement and of the vote. In this case, there were changes made to the document. It was not finalized, and therefore there was no reporting out requirement. We did provide a press release, which we believe satisfied those requirements. We also responded to Public Records Act requests for copies of the executed separation agreement. And the vote is disclosable upon the request of any member of the public.
Okay. So is there... Julie.
No.
You're out of... Julie, you're out of order.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is there... Clearly, you're our legal counsel. You've told us we have not violated the Brown Act. However, is there a way we can come back and provide more information on this item? And I would also say this claim of Mr. Gearhart writing himself a $3,500 check is not true on the face of it as well. So I'm just thinking, is there a way we can provide additional information?
What specific additional information would you like provided? Because we did release the actual agreement. So, the vote was 2-1, Director Hill voting no. Other than that, I don't believe there's anything else to disclose.
So let me add to that. Thank you for that. So, yes, it was a 2-1 vote with Director Hill voting no on the separation agreement. And I'm going to say that yes, everyone's calling for an investigation now, and apparently everyone other than Mr. Huebner is allowed due diligence. We still live in a country where people do have that luxury of being considered innocent until proven guilty. You all tell us to stop the cost with investigations, yet you're now asking for more investigations. I will also say, on a 3-0 vote, when we were hiring Mr. Huebner, the board unanimously voted for relocation costs to him. So that's what I'm going to provide, and that's what I'm going to give you, because I'm trying really hard to get more information and not. The whole issue we keep running into is this board being subjected to legal challenges from all sides, and that includes Mr. Huebner. And there are 37,000 ratepayers in this district, and we are trying to look out for the interest for everyone in this district.
Anyway. Mr. Chair, if I might make an additional comment, I'm disturbed to hear that members of the public are being chastised about due process not being afforded Mr. Huebner, when others of our employees have been subject to apparently the same treatment at the behest of Mr. Huebner.
Well, first of all, I'm not chastising. I'm trying to give information. If my tone is a little bit out of whack, obviously we take on these roles. We take this very seriously. And we're all human. So if I'm expressing a little frustration, then so be it. But I think the public needs to know that it's really hard to sit up here, and I've been doing this for many years, to hear people make claims and allegations, and yet we're trying to abide by the law. And I think people deserve to have some additional information, provided I'm not subjecting this board and this district to more legal challenge. So I'm not chastising folks. I'm trying to give people information so now they have at least some of the rest of the information. So with that, we are on the item regarding minutes for July 26th. And I believe, Karen, you were not at the meeting.
That's correct.
And Jim, what do you have any motion you want to make on these minutes or not?
No motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So I guess we're just going to have to move these minutes to the next board meeting. Okay, how about the minutes of the meeting of August 2nd?
For the meeting of August 2nd, with respect to item 5C, financial review for June, the minutes make absolutely no sense. What I observed on looking at the numbers that were presented by Mr. Huebner and comparing the amount of money received by the district from all sources, the amount of money expended by the district from all sources, there was about an $800,000 net income to the district. Yet, and the final total number of dollars in the district's accounts were similarly reported. I looked at the previous year's reported totals, and I expected to see that that income of approximately $800,000 would be reflected in the district's accounts. And that did not happen. And so that was my objection to the financial review as presented. And I still have not had that question answered. And I'm still very concerned about the apparent, I would hope that that's an accounting error, but I've not seen any effort to look into that or to explain the discrepancy.
Very good. And I think, Karen, you were not at this meeting.
Correct. Either. I was not there.
Let me see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address the minutes from the meeting of August 2nd, 2017.
Julie Tacker and with respect to something Ms. Dury said earlier with regard to adding, this is new, adding the community from which each person is speaking from. I think that should be removed. The spectators' right to anonymity, Government Code Section 54953.3, allows the public to participate anonymously. We didn't volunteer where we live, and I don't think you have the right to assert where we live, nor does it matter. It doesn't matter where we live. What does matter is the actual content of the minutes. With respect to action item number 6A, with regard to my comments, I did not say where I was from, but I did call for a point of order. I'd like these minutes to reflect why. And the reason I requested them was because Ms. Lucy was using her cell phone to make the sound of a cow mooing each time I walked to the podium. I want the record to reflect that. It's humiliating as all get to me, but for her to have done that, I want everyone else to know what kind of person goes there. Enough said.
Is there anyone else?
Von Arnelson, at the end of the meeting, the board member comments on communications, Director Hill asked for four things. It looks like you're kind of stepping forward on a couple of them. One is the budget review, and the second one may be the discussion of the separation agreement of the former administrator. But I'd really, I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Scholes about if someone makes a comment, it has an allegation, you have to do an investigation. I think that's honk. I think that sometimes in discretion you look at it and say, you know, does it really warrant an investigation? And the investigation that was done by Mr. Hill, I mean, they threw everything on the wall that they could get to see if something would stick. Nothing really stuck. And then the person that investigated him wasn't even capable of doing that because he didn't know anything about the Brown Act, and he was supposed to be investigating the Brown Act. So let's get rid of, like I said, let's get the investigations out there. What Mr. Hill said about talking about discussing them and finding out what the cost was and what they are. Also, his fourth comment about bringing Mr. Clemens and Mr. Simpson, Ms. Simpson back, I support that comment.
Okay.
Patricia Price, I also support the comment, bringing it back to return Mr. Clemens and Ms. Simpson to their positions. I think it's way, way past time.
Anyone else? Okay, let me close it and bring it back to the board. And these are minutes. Karen was not at the meeting. So, Jim, what's your any motion, any comments?
I do wish to assure the members of the public that individuals whose sole contribution to public discourse consists of animal noises is not one that I'm going to take in very high regard.
And I think we all agree with you in that comment. I will say, while Ms. Tacker did not identify herself as being from the community that's shown in these written minutes, others did, as we've heard others tonight say that they were from Grover Beach or other places. So whether they're shown in these minutes or not, they are on the official tapes. So I think the minutes just need to at this point, unless if you're not ready to move forward on these minutes, you want to give some direction, then we do that. Because I think, Karen, you said you haven't.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I would like to see the discussion on the financials corrected and the guesses that were made as to areas of residence of people that spoke at public comment, I would recommend to be removed. I also note that the minutes indicated at the end that the meeting today would be held at the Grover Beach Council Chambers, and I still am not clear on how the that came to be changed with apparently no prior meeting to the public. I would hope that we would provide plenty of advance notice to the public when we intend to change the location of our meetings.
So I would just say, for clarification, those who did not identify where they were from, those others who did, I think were perfectly fine to have them in the minutes. They obviously felt they needed to share it to the public, and it should be reflected in minutes. And then I would say, yes, with respect to the location of this meeting, it's pretty amazing. We obviously did not have that conversation. We had made an agreement ahead of time that after 6 months, the meetings would move to Arroyo Grande, but I think we'll do a better job of discussing what the next meeting is. So I think with that, we'll just continue these minutes. And with
okay. If I might, I'm... we are spending some time on pursuing the financial issue, and I want to make sure I'm pursuing it in the right direction. So I was a little if you could help me clarify what you would like, how would you like the minutes to read, that would help me make sure that we are expending staff resources in the way you have requested.
I'd be glad to do that, Rick. Thank you very much for taking that up. And I can provide you with that at a later time.
And that's on the financial
statement, yes.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to action item. This is item 6A. This is approval of contracts with technical consultants. Authorized board chair was designated to execute contracts for specialized technical and administrative services to the district for up to 6 months. And I believe, Mr. Trujillo, are you going to present this item?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Scholes. Pursuant to the board's direction at the last meeting, we have returned with a contract that has been drafted and approved by legal counsel with terms consistent as approved by the board. The major terms are $150 an hour, a six-month duration for this, the appointment of Paul Karp and Rick Sweet as technical advisors. There's an indemnity provision which was requested by Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp and agreed to by the board. And the effective date of the agreement is July 27th to accommodate for the transition issues that were necessary. There are two resolutions. The first resolution, number 2017-374, is the resolution that the board adopted with the corrections that Chairman Hill or Director Hill requested. The resolution 375 is approving the contract. And with that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Okay, any questions of legal counsel? Karen?
No, I have none.
Jim?
No questions. I have one comment.
Okay, let's hold that. Let me see if there's anyone from the community that would like to address this item.
Julie Tacker, and I spoke earlier about my interactions already with Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp, and they have been completely professional and swift in nature. I appreciate that very much. What I also appreciate is that this contract has no car allowance, and it has no moving expenses, and it has no lifetime benefits. You're going to get what you pay for at $150 an hour. Mr. Huebner was $70 an hour, and you're going to pay a lot more to clean up his mess. I'm confident that both these gentlemen are not even going to, combined, are not going to work 40 hours a week because of their history with the district, because of their knowledge working in public agencies at the helm and not in the back seat as Mr. Huebner came to this district from. I believe they do have leadership qualities that will benefit the district. I had disagreements with both of them when they served this district before. That is water under the bridge, and I can get past it. I hope they can, too. But they already have been helpful in what I've asked for and what does uncover that there was no formal agreement for relocation expenses, Mr. Scholes. There was no formal agreement, and the man took the money. So I don't know how you fix that, but that's why I'm asking for an investigation. And I hate the cost, but I think it's necessary.
Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it to the public. Any board comments, any board questions?
I'm certainly satisfied with those gentlemen on board.
Okay.
You
got a comment?
Yes, I recommended very strongly that Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp be engaged for this position. I'm delighted that they're willing to undertake the assignment, and I strongly endorse their participation with the district. There is one thing on our item 6A, page 8. Item F, district board meetings. Under direction of the board chair, prepare board agenda and items for board consideration. I would ask that that be changed to read under direction of the board of directors, because no individual director has authority to do actions absent approval of the board. And this would indicate that the chair actually has more authority than other board members. That's item 2F on page 8 of item 6A of the agenda. So with that change, under direction of the board of directors, prepare board agenda and items for board consideration is what it would read. I would move for approval of the engagement of Mr. Sweet and Mr. Karp as presented.
Okay.
I would just question that change that normally the board chair takes on the agendas. I mean, that's certainly the way we do it at Oceana, with just the board chair.
Well, I think this actually violates our policy in that two directors must agree to put anything on the agenda. Therefore, I think the chair is enjoined by that policy from unilaterally putting items on the board agenda.
What about violation of the Brown Act at the other side with a serial meeting or a joint meeting ahead of a meeting?
Apparently, that policy wasn't well thought out when it was proposed.
Everyone, calm down. Legal counsel.
Thank you, Chairman Schultz. Director White did identify the issue. Taking direction from two board members would technically constitute a violation of the Brown Act. The bylaws do specify that the chair can place anything on the agenda or two directors in an open session.
I think the policy says that two directors have to agree to put something on the agenda.
Okay. Sounds like. So you're basically opining that, as written, this document does comply with bylaws and any legal requirements.
Yes, that is my opinion. If Director Hill would like to point out in the bylaws where, if that's in the bylaws, it would need to be corrected, and we can look at that and bring it forward. My recollection is that it's not in there, but I haven't looked at that for quite some time.
Okay.
I see. I understand what Jim is saying, and I understand what he's saying, but I think what needs to be changed at a public meeting, with a three-member board, I question whether you need two members of a three-member board to agree to have something put on the agenda. But after an open session, it is a topic. Then it goes to the board chairperson, who works with the staff to put the agenda together. Isn't that what we're talking about?
Well, once it's approved in an open meeting by two members of the board or more, I don't see any reason for further engagement of the chair to prepare the agenda items. I think that would be left to staff.
Well, what if there isn't? Well, let me weigh in, because I would say, as a chair, I have not abused any authority in putting anything on this agenda that this board as a body has approved or staff feels is necessary for the operation of this plant. And I'll stand by my record. I have not done that. And that said, that basically, I agree, Jim, if it's approved in an open session, it goes on the agenda. But sometimes staff will come to the board, and I'm sure you recall this, even as mayor, they come to us with an urgent item that requires being put on an agenda. So,
Mr. Chair, in the interest of moving this item forward, I'm willing to support it this evening as presented, under the condition that we agree to look at the policy and review the policy and make sure that the policy is not in conflict with this.
I think that's a fair way to proceed, and thank you for that.
Yeah, I would support that, too.
Okay, so there is a motion. And there was a second. Let's do a roll call.
Did we make a motion?
My motion was to second it.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah.
So there's a motion, and then there's some direction to that. So the motion was made by Director Hill, seconded by Director White.
Sorry.
It's my turn.
Director Hill.
Yes.
Director White.
Yes.
And Chairman Schultz.
Yes. And then I think what we will do is give direction to staff to bring back and just have a discussion in open session regarding bylaws, as I think Director Hill pointed out. We want to make sure that there are no inconsistencies on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Agree with you.
Okay, very good. So let's move on to item 6B. This is a technical consultants and plant operations report. Mr. Sweet?
Yes, hopefully you all have had an opportunity to review the report. Mr. Karp and I are deeply into many of these items already, and if we can provide further updates beyond this report tonight, well, I'll be glad to give you additional information as you request, if indeed I have it at this point.
Okay. Any questions of Mr. Sweet?
I thought it was a very comprehensive report.
Jim?
Really brings everything up to date. Jim has.
I realized that our new technical and administrative consultants have not really had time to put their own stamp on these types of reports, and it's largely appears to be a carryover. One thing I will note that I'm beginning to be concerned that there's been no training for staff reported for quite some time on these reports, and I would hope that we do undertake training, especially for aspects of safety and the like, on a regular basis. So we'd look forward to seeing that, and I'm confident that that Mr. Karp and Mr. Sweet will assure that that takes place. So I'm willing, ready to accept the report.
Great. Let me open this up and see if there's anyone from the community that would like to comment on this report.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker. And I have some concerns over the redundancy project. And I guess what I'm mainly concerned with is that it looks like the efforts in which to seek financing are actually going to cost money. That's what they say. You have to spend money to make money. So your guys are spending some money to get some CEQA and some other things that the financing authorities, financing agencies are asking for. What I'm wondering is, what does that drive the cost of the project up? If it's insignificant, then that's I guess it's okay. But I don't believe that it is. I think these are expensive, and I do think they take time. And I think we need to see some numbers, because when you have a project that grows in cost, then you should probably rethink what direction you're going. The other question I have, and it actually relates to a warrant that was approved earlier tonight, $2,690.32 to Tri-County offices for administrative office space, and in relation to the district's control building and the office space there and the improvements that are going on at the main building, you still have a trailer. And I'm curious what the status of the trailer. I understood that it and the C-train both needed to be gone by the 1st of September, as per the permit from the Coastal Commission. There's some mention in the operations report about the fixed film reactor and the oil sampling. I know that we've been looking for and watching any metal shavings in there. Some time ago, the district superintendent and staff and engineers all worked on a backup plan for the fixed film reactor, and there was a videotape that would show how that works. And that was never brought to your board, and I think it would be opportune to do that in light of the fact that your redundancy project is still many, many moons away, and even a solar eclipse away. There, you mentioned training. There, Mr. Clemens recently received his operator grade 5, and your district has not reimbursed him for that, and I do believe, I understand, that he did submit for reimbursement, and I think he's owed those funds. And you would be well served by having a grade 5 working at this plant. Those are in high demand all over the state.
Thank you for your comments.
You're welcome.
Anyone else?
Good evening, April Dury. So looking again at the August 2nd minutes, when there was discussion regarding the item 5C financial review for June, that's when Director Hill brought up the fact that the financials didn't seem to make a lot of sense to him, and there seemed to be about an $800,000 discrepancy. And it was stated in our minutes, our record of note, Paul Karp, technical/administrative services advisor, stated that he would review the financials and report to the board at the next meeting. That is this meeting, and I don't see any of that information in what's been provided to you, so I'm maybe hoping it's an extemporaneous report that he'll be giving and that you'll be asking for that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public. And I think this is just a receive and file, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. That's correct.
So we're going to move on to board member communications. Karen, any communications?
No, just I hope everybody's out on the route on Friday to see a return of a World War II veteran, family, friend of mine, family. I never met him, but I would like to see everybody on the motorcade route on Friday, which goes from 13th Street west on Grand to Highway 1, then all the way along Highway 1 to Halcyon Road, and then Halcyon Road to the cemetery. It would be nice to see some people waving flags. Thank you.
Very good. Jim, you have anything?
In light of the fact that an investigation into my activities with the district was recently concluded and posted on the district website before I had been able to see it or participate in it, I would like to make a brief statement on that, although it's not on the agenda this evening.
Okay. You okay with that?
Yes, as long as it's kept short and no action is taken by the board.
Okay. We'll make it as short as possible. Voters expect mayors and board members to exercise oversight of city or district executives in their activities. Mayors and board members have failed to provide that oversight or not serving the public trust. The allegations that led to the expensive Liebert-Cassidy-Whitmore investigation were obviously a political attack. The pointless investigation took 6 months and reviewed over 2,500 documents supplied by my detractors, primarily sources from a former sanitation district director and the recently departed district administrator. It's reported the investigator ran out of money after going through this incredible volume of material. The investigator left one voicemail asking me for contact. I had my attorney, Stu Jenkins, contact him and the Fresno firm that hired him as I was leaving on vacation. Liebert Cassidy Whitmore refused to provide Mr. Jenkins either what accusations they desired me to respond to or the identities of the accusers. They broke contact when those fundamental elements of due process were requested. Many of the documents in the report they released August 7th, are represented to be email strings. These appear to have been assembled by the investigator or others who supplied them to the investigator as being connected. They do not reflect the content of emails I actually sent. There are several other errors in the report. Had Liebert Cassidy Whitmore and their investigator complied with basic due process by providing the accusations, the accusers, and the falsified documents supplied by my accusers, these would easily have been cleared up. Sewage treatment to preserve the health of Arroyo Grande residents, and indeed all district residents, is the most important services the city provides and the only service the district provides. The mayor serves on the Sanitation District Board by California statute to oversee and assure that sewage is safely and fully treated at reasonable cost, and residents expect active and diligent attention to that function. On taking office at the Sanitation District, I was aware the plant had been very poorly run near the end of long-serving Administrator John Wallace's tenure. The district had been plagued by corruption and mismanagement. The district was mired in an intractable lawsuit regarding the huge 2010 sewage spill. Rather than accept a $400,000 settlement offer and recognize the opportunity to correct declining performance at the district, directors Matt Guerrero, Tony Ferrara, and Bill Nichols voted to sue our regulator, the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. Their action ultimately cost district ratepayers over $1 million in fines and another $1 million in attorney's fees. The biological process had not been maintained, and huge amounts of chlorine were being used as a stopgap before discharging sewage to the ocean. 2 years previous to my taking office, John Wallace resigned, and a new temporary administrator, Mr. Karp, indeed, who is, I'm glad to see, returned to the district, an experienced engineer, and the current superintendent, Mr. John Clements, took over and restarted the biological process. The current superintendent, Mr. Clements, then continued to operate the plant well in the interim despite severe financial constraints. Indeed, the financial outlook improved materially on his watch. Over the objections and interference of Director Matt Guerrero, Mary Lucy, and others, Carl Knudsen was hired to perform a review of past management practices of the district. This resulted in identification of issues that were reported to the district attorney. Criminal conflict of interest charges were filed against John Wallace for issues here at our district and at another district he managed as a result. Meanwhile, Superintendent Clements continued to operate the plant well. His efforts served the residents of the district well, and it had clearly turned around. But these efforts may have resulted in embarrassment to some board members whose prior oversight had been less than adequate. Not long after taking office, I received a copy of an email from someone using the pseudonym Trinity Neo and directed to the superintendent. This email contained the most vile and reprehensible racial slurs imaginable about our superintendent, who is African American, and disparaged the superintendent in a profane diatribe that also touched on his personal relationship with the district secretary, who's white. I contacted the superintendent, who said he had received other similar emails previously and had become very uncomfortable. Despite those previous emails being copied to district directors, nothing had been done. I immediately gave the email to the Arroyo Grande Police, who contacted and worked with the sheriff's office. Meanwhile, I received more of these types of emails. The police were eventually able to trace the source to an individual desiring the superintendent's job position. Despite the disgusting comment, content of the emails were not deemed to merit criminal prosecution. Free speech is something that I support, although this was reprehensible. Also during this time, in meetings she attended, then-Director Mary Lucy would often comment adversely on the superintendent's personal relationship and would attempt to provoke the superintendent with side comments disparaging him in his performance. No investigation of these instances was ever conducted. Now a recently departed district administrator was subsequently engaged. Apparently at the instigation of then-board member Lucy, and apparently with at least acquiescence of the board chairman, the administrator soon began a series of very expensive and highly questionable investigations about the superintendent. Those investigations were commenced without board vote or direction. On behalf of district residents, I've objected to those expenses and the disruption to the operation of the sanitation district that resulted. Although the superintendent had no other recourse, the board was not informed of the nature or even the numbers of these investigations started by the administrator. The superintendent and district secretary were put on administrative leave with no explanation given, but almost immediately two friends of other board members were hired by the administrator to replace the one secretary. I asked repeatedly for agenda items for the board to be able to discuss and understand what was happening, but never received approval from my board colleagues. I was occasionally told by counsel that the chairman was aware of the investigations. The chairman has no more right to information than any other member, and there is no excuse for him to have more information than the rest of the board. The residents of Arroyo Grande, who make up half of those served by the sanitation district, have a right to have a fully informed board member actively engaged to assure that sewage treatment plant is operated effectively, efficiently, and at low cost, especially considering the past history of corruption and mismanagement. Sewage treatment must not be a cash cow benefiting individuals at the expense of residents served. Mr. Jenkins' office will release a direct response to each of the allegations, most of which were already deemed unfounded by the investigator. I do think one item merits separate comment, and that is an internal sanitation district investigation disclosed by the Liebert-Cassidy-Whitmore report instigated by Miss Lucy's wife, who was disingenuously represented as, quote, a member of the public, I think to disguise her relationship with Miss Lucy. This related from a meeting where they commented adversely on the superintendent's personal relationship and said she wasn't going to pay to wash the superintendent's dirty underwear in respect to purchase of a washing machine for staff use in the event of accidental contamination. I will not stand by in seeming acquiescence of systematic proceedings against employees that appear to be racially motivated. I take my responsibility as director seriously and will continue to provide oversight of management and advocate for those efforts such as redundancy and wastewater recycling that will benefit district residents for years to come.
So, thank you for those comments, and I'm not going to follow that up with significant comments, given that some of us believe in oversight, believe in being balanced, believe in being fair to everyone. And I find it ironic that you've made a statement regarding monies and investigations about an individual who whose rights we are actually trying to protect. The irony is pretty amazing. And we as board members, whether we are on this board or whether we are on the city council, have professionals who oversee day-to-day operations, who deal with personnel matters. And the moment we start sticking our noses in those matters, complicating the issue subjects this district individuals to legal lawsuit and challenges. And I think we've seen that from the two individuals you mentioned, and I'm not going to mention them by name, who have come into meetings and brazenly disrespected this board and the public while we're all the while trying to get through an investigation on allegations made. And I disagree, Mr. Arnoldson, when legal counsel calls me and says there has been a claim from a ratepayer, does not matter who they are related to, we must investigate. Anything else is a dereliction of duty. So you guys, thank you for that statement. And I'm going to stop there. There's a lot more I can say, but I'm trying to take the moral high ground, the legal high ground, and that's where I stand, and that's what I stand by.
I'm just going to say one thing that I hear it a lot. I try very carefully not to slander other people, and I hear it all around me. I'm not pointing fingers at anybody. I'm just saying I wish people would choose their words carefully, because they really, really, really are on the edge of legal slander sometimes when they make claims against people, make claims against this happening. I really, really, really would like us all, and I try myself. I believe in karma and reincarnation. I try very hard to take the high ground whenever I can, and if everybody else could do the same, I'd really appreciate it, because I keep thinking, oh, that's a slanderous comment. It's like the Brown Act. You really, really, really have to be careful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Karen. I agree with your comment.
Legal counsel, and you cover the closed session item tonight.
Okay. The Board of Directors will hold a closed session to confer with labor negotiators. The agency designated representatives is Rick Sweet or Paul Karp and Susan Wells. The employee organization is Service Employees International Union, Local 620. Thank you.
Thank you. And let me see if there's any members of the community that would like to comment on closed session. And please keep your comments to the closed session item.
I would like to say it's not slander if it's truth.
Can be.
Okay.
These are negotiations with a union, and I'd just like to point out that you did not have a union for 50 years in the history of this district until Mr. Huebner came to the administrator's position. Ironically, Oceano did not have a union until Miss Lucy was well on that board. She happened to be well on this board at the very same time that the union's coming here. So maybe it's coincidence. I believe it irony.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward, we are going to recess in a closed session.